overall, it really was pretty much, I would say, favorably inclined towards Alaska.
A look at how the congressional budget deal will impact the state. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 12th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a platinum mine is planned for Togiak Wildlife Refuge.
We have yet to really see a mining operation of this type that hasn't had impacts.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the Association of Alaska School Boards, AASB, promotes one-to-one digital learning for all Alaska students to prepare them for success in the global economy. More information at aasb.org.
And by
Alaska Business Monthly, providing a source for statewide in-depth business news on Twitter at AK Business Month or Facebook.
House Republicans unveiled overnight the details of the budget deal hatched on Friday, right at the deadline before a government shutdown. It cuts more than $38 billion from this year's budget, which runs until October. The Congress will vote on the plan's details this week. Its passage is likely, since the top Republican in the House, the top Democrat in the Senate, and President Obama have all given their approval. Alaska's delegation is generally supporting it. Republican Congressman Don Young says, bottom line, he doesn't want to see a government shutdown, and he's more worried about the fight over next year's budget, which is already brewing.
I'm going to vote, of course, for it, because we have to keep the government running. And we go back to negotiating again, we won't have any momentum going, and we have to address this 2012 budget, which is really the hard nut to swallow. And the one for 2011 is, you know, it's not really that bad. Everybody's crying bloody murder, but it's left a lot of good things in the bill for Alaska, and a lot of, you know, things that are not so good. But overall, it really was pretty much, I would say, favorably inclined towards Alaska.
The Denali Commission is getting funding for $10.7 million, down from the $12 million that had been proposed. There is a lingering question over $15 million in funds that the commission had carried over from various funding streams and then obligated to other projects. Congress says they want the $15 million back. If rescinding those funds stands, that could have a big impact on rural Alaska projects. The program that gives low-income heating assistance, LIHEAP, suffers a cut of $390 million. Senator Begich says the LIHEAP cut is his biggest concern because the program helps 11,000 Alaskan families. Despite that, Begich says at this point he's inclined to support the overall deal.
We're going to go through the whole bill now that it's filed at 2 a.m. over there on the House side. You know, we didn't get it until obviously this morning, so we're going through it. But it is about what I thought it would be at the end of the day, almost about a $40 billion reduction from the 2010 enacted budget, which is a real reduction. And I think what I heard back home from Alaskans on a regular basis is get the fiscal house of the government under control. Part of that means making some hard decisions on the budget.
Begich is also watching the nearly $1 billion in cuts to grants for the clean water projects for local governments and tribes. That's part of a $1.6 billion cut to the Environmental Protection Agency. Begich says because this bill was centered around spending, they couldn't make revenue policy decisions, like trying to eliminate tax breaks for the wealthy. He says those arguments are looming, though. Just like Congressman Young, Begich says the big focus will soon be on next year's budget. And he says, brace for a big fight. A mine is in the works for the Togiak National Wildlife Refuge near Dillingham. Mining claims were made for the area long before the refuge existed. Now a company called Excess Platinum wants to revise the old platinum mine sites and open some new ones. APRN. KDLG's Daisha Eaton explains.
The area Excess has their eye on is on the far southwestern edge of the Togiak Refuge, about 15 miles south of the village of Platinum on the Salmon River that flows into Kuskokwim Bay. As Paul Liedberg, manager of the Togiak Wildlife Refuge, explains, the area was mined before. The previously mined areas of the claim sit on Bureau of Land Management and Chelista Corporation lands. The portion of the claim on refuge lands has never been mined.
This was a mine that existed from, I think, in the 30s is when it started, ended operations in the 70s, and it's sort of been start and stop since then. But this is a new company with new money behind it and new technology.
Liedberg acknowledges it is unusual to have a mine in a wildlife refuge. He says there are other refuges that have valid mining claims, but none of them have been on the scale that excess platinum is expected to develop. Liedberg says there are about 25 claim sites inside the Togiak National Wildlife Refuge, and he says most of them are along the Salmon River.
And that's a river that, for its size, gets tremendous runs of salmon in it.
Liedberg says protecting those salmon runs is a high priority for the refuge. Jim Fincher, a field manager with BLM, says the project is in the beginning stages, and his offices have not yet received a proposal from Excess. He says the company already has permission to mine sites that were previously mined, but the areas that have never been mined inside the refuge on undisturbed lands will take more time.
For areas of undisturbed claims, particularly on the refuge, what the company is going to have to do is conduct a validity exam to determine that the value of the resources would warrant going in and mining those claims.
Jim Slade, the chief operating officer with Excess Platinum, says his company bought the rights to the claim in 2007. Slade explains a lot has changed since the mine was last active in the 70s. New technology, he says, will enable Excess Platinum to leave a lighter footprint than the former alluvial mining used in the area during the 20th century.
It's an alluvial mine, which is a placer, and of course Alaskans are very familiar with placer mining. It wasn't very efficient in the recovery of the very fine gold and platinum that's available there. So we're bringing in higher grade centrifuges to recover the fines and different methods. No chemicals are being used in this process at all. It's strictly gravity and magnetics for detecting some of the larger particles.
Slade also emphasized that his company is planning to include the restoration of the mining areas along the Salmon River in their plan. Even so, Nicole Whittington Evans, Alaska Regional Director for the Wilderness Society, says she has concerns.
We have concerns hearing about this proposal for the very significant wilderness values and subsistence values that Togiak National Wildlife Refuge is known for.
Whittington Evans says without seeing the actual proposal, she can't comment on specifics, but she says past experience with platinum mines makes the Wilderness Society wary.
We have yet to really see a mining operation of this type that hasn't had impacts on the natural environment around it. And while we can't speak to specifics of this proposal, we have significant concerns about toxic waste as an outcome of this mining venture.
The Togiak National Wildlife Refuge was established in 1980. The refuge is more than 4 million acres and is the fourth largest national wildlife refuge in the U.S. In addition to being the spawning grounds for salmon, the refuge is home to 48 mammal species, more than 200 types of birds, and about 500 different kinds of plants. Excess Platinum says they plan to submit their mining proposal to the BLM by the end of the month. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, in these budget-cutting times, Senator Begich is making the case for increased funding for one thing.
As we balance this budget, we still have to invest in a growth agenda. The growth agenda is education.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
Talks to keep the coastal management program going after July 1st have fallen apart. Word came in messages to negotiators this morning that Governor Sean Parnell had decided to suspend talks to resolve the remaining differences between the administration and developers and legislators representing coastal residents. After requesting more information, APRN received a terse email message from the governor's press secretary, Sharon Lehow, stating, quote, the governor's involvement in ACM AAMP negotiations has ended indefinitely. Leahow later said the governor felt the talks were at an impasse because the latest version of the bill hinders development, which is counter to what the governor wants to accomplish. The governor's point person on the issue, Deputy Commissioner of Natural Resources Joe Balash, has returned to Anchorage. Identical House and Senate bills on the issue are pending action before adjournment on Sunday. However, yesterday, Attorney General John Burns raised concerns over several points in the bill. Bethel Democrat Bob Heron says today's talks were set up to look at those concerns, and Heron says he is not giving up on the issue.
We're going to continue to try to craft a CS for finance that takes into all their considerations that they've shared with us, both privately and in the House Finance Committee.
Beldy's Republican Eric Feige, who was also involved in rewriting the bill, says the most recent version respected what the governor said were principles he would not neglect. Those standards were combined with the wants and desires of coastal communities.
In the end, we had a piece of legislation that was basically to the point of dotting some I's, crossing some T's, adjusting some language to make sure that the state of Alaska was protected, not from folks in the coastal zone or folks in the administration, but for other entities outside the state that would have sought to use language within that those statutes to their advantage instead of to ours.
The bills are still in committee, and Bethel Senator Lyman Hoffman says the legislature will continue to look at them.
For the governor to come up at the last minute and not only does not want to work on the bill or say this or that is wrong, is not addressing the problem. The people of Alaska want some say on coastal issues, and that's what we've been striving for.
Depending on the rewritten version that Huron comes up with in the House, Hoffman says he is prepared to work to send the governor the bills that are now on the table. Senator Mark Begich is calling for an education overhaul because he thinks the No Child Left Behind law isn't working for Alaska. He has reintroduced legislation for a teaching and learning program that focuses on science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM, education. Begich believes education in these areas can prepare students for the jobs of the future. APRN's Jersey Shedlock has the story.
Last week, when Senator Begich spoke before the Armed Services Committee, U.S. Army officials brought up the need for more STEM education during budget discussions.
And one of the issues that came up from the Army was the need for more STEM education for people who are entering the Army because of the great needs they have for science and technology and engineering and math needs. So it's not just the general public or the private sector or government. It's also the military. It's a variety of areas. We have a huge gap.
It's a story you're probably tired of hearing. U.S. students lag far behind their foreign counterparts when it comes to subjects like science and engineering. Begich has proposed legislation that would allocate $300 million in competitive grants to state education agencies. The money would also be available for agencies in partnership with nonprofits and higher education institutions across the country. The STEM legislation is part of an overhaul of the national education system. Begich says it's the only way the U.S. can remain competitive in the world economy.
It will also, the way we've done the legislation is we want to make sure that not only are we offering opportunities for young people to get the education they need, we also are making sure that the teachers get the professional education they need so they're trained and ready to teach these young people in these areas.
For the first time this year, the Anchorage School District has an identified STEM education program. The ASD STEM coordinator, Michael Fenster, says the math and science departments are now combined into a single STEM department.
Of course, in the educational world, most students given half a chance to say that what they're learning in math will pertain to science, what they're learning in science will pertain to math, as long as their teacher, you know, even opens the door for them to see the seed planted. And many students will see that going right away, so that there is a cross-curricular connection there. We want to just help that happen without putting too much of an extra load on the teachers.
Fenster is eager in his new position to improve these subjects. He retired as an engineer to become a school teacher. He says STEM education at elementary and middle school levels is easier to handle than high school curriculum.
The high schools, it gets more difficult because the teachers are highly qualified in very discrete subjects, and it's more difficult for them to, again, feel comfortable teaching across a curriculum.
Senator Begich knows it's hard to make the case for investing new federal dollars in anything right now, but he says education should be an exception.
As we balance this budget, move to reduce the cost of government, which we have to do, there's no question about it, we still have to invest in a growth agenda. The growth agenda is education. If anyone says, well, geez, we got to cut all across the board plus reduce even more in our education budget, we're destroying our future.
Begich anticipates his STEM legislation will get more attention by early summer when the No Child Left Behind law is rewritten. The legislation will be heard along with the rewrite in September as part of a full debate on education in Congress. For APRN in Anchorage, I'm Jersey Shedlock.
Vehicle owners will have just over 2 weeks to remove studded tires or face a $50 fine. The May 1st stud deadline is standard for the interior, but recent snow and ice prompted its extension to cover areas of southern Alaska. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, the state balances safety with road damage in determining how long into the spring studded tires can be used.
As sure as the trash that's emerging from snowbanks alongside Alaska's roadways signals the beginning of spring, so too does the May 1st studded tire removal deadline. And now, that's also the deadline to remove studded tires from vehicles traveling on the southern Kenai Peninsula, Kodiak Island, and southeastern Alaska. Department of Public Safety Commissioner Joseph Masters on Friday extended the deadline for those roadways because of continuing slick conditions there due to freezing rain and late-season snowstorms. Alaska State Troopers spokeswoman Megan Peters says it's too soon to say whether there'll be a need to extend the deadline for roadways in the interior.
And once it gets close to the time, they'll evaluate the situation based on the road conditions and the projected weather patterns.
Motorists who fail to remove studded tires by May 1st face a $50 fine from troopers, but those who are cited can avoid that by complying with the work order and removing the studded tires, then showing proof to troopers. Some municipalities around the state, however, have stricter studded tire laws and stiffer fines. The reason studded tires must be removed, of course, is that they make pavement wear out faster, requiring more maintenance and more cost to taxpayers. Meadow Bailey, a spokeswoman for the State Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, says that's especially true in south central Alaska, where there's more traffic.
We don't have as much traffic in the interior, but in Anchorage, it's made a big difference. If you've driven on the Glen Highway, we just had projects going in and repaving the Glen Highway because it was so rutted. So it does make a big difference. It wears the pavement out faster.
Bailey says the earlier onset of warmer temperatures in South Central accelerates the wear and tear on pavement.
When the pavement is cooler, when it's frozen in the winter, it's not as big of a deal.
A recent study conducted for the Transportation Department suggests studs wear out pavement in Anchorage and Juneau nearly four times faster than pavement in the Fairbanks area. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com. And by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
A downtown Fairbanks art project is aimed at tapping public emotion and creativity to revitalize an old hotel. Two big chalkboards have been installed along the street level of the empty Polaris building. The Alaska Design Forum-funded project has brought New Orleans artist Candy Chang to Fairbanks Chang, who has a background in urban planning and graphic design, says the Looking for Love Again project is set up to remember the old high-rises past and explore its potential.
One chalkboard will say, my memories of the Polaris building, and the other will say, my hopes for the Polaris building. So people can write directly on the chalkboards to share their stories, as well as propose ideas for what they would like to see it become.
Chang says the chalkboard project, which is also supported by the Downtown Association, provides a way for people to get involved and shape the neighborhood. The 11-story Polaris is Fairbanks' tallest building. It has sat empty for the last decade, but a developer has been given tax breaks and is trying to raise funds to restore it. Chang says the challenges posed by old buildings like the Polaris and their redevelopment are a common one.
All across America, you see abandoned buildings everywhere, and they become such a common sight that they often kind of slip quietly into the backdrop of our cities, like an accepted new part of our landscape. So I wonder, you know, how can we throw a kind of spotlight on a building and ask, you know, what happened here? Who grew up here? You know, why is it neglected? What should it become?
Comments posted on the two 8-by-16-foot Polaris building blackboards will be logged and posted on a companion website. The 41st Native Youth Olympics is coming up at the Dena'ina Convention Center in Anchorage from April 29th through May 1st. As KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports, several factors have contributed to the longevity of this annual event.
Native Youth Olympics games include unusual contests such as the wrist carry, seal hop, one-hand reach, and high kick, which Kelly Hurd, development director and NYO coordinator for Cook Inlet Tribal Council, says are a link to Alaska's past.
So it's about competition, but more than anything, perhaps the more underlying factor as well is sharing Alaska's great, you know, heritage and its some traditions and really sharing that with all members of our community. And I think that's also another thing that is unique about NYO Games is that it's open to all members of our community. So kids can participate regardless of what background that they are in.
Hurd says NYO is also a showcase of athleticism.
They really celebrate and focus on strength and agility, balance of body and mind, as well as perhaps some of the skills that were needed for survival, for hunting and for fishing.
She says NYO also emphasizes values such as teamwork, harmonious competition, and cooperation.
I think what really deeply inspired me is when I saw how helpful the kids were with each other, how helpful the coaches were and the judges were when a kid who was really trying, this is perhaps during the prelims, when he or she was trying at an event and perhaps wasn't getting the technique quite right, the judges would stop and show them that proper way to do that certain event.
Hurd says this year's NYO will include a talk by Inupiaq Iditarod winner and NYO record holder John Baker of Kotzebue. He'll talk about how hard work and determination helped him win the Iditarod on his 15th try. Hurd says there will be a concert with Bamua, traditional Alaska Native dance performances, as well as a Sailor Boy pilot bread recipe contest with prizes of up to a one-year supply of pilot bread. In Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Superior Court Judge Marvin Hamilton III passed away Saturday night at his home in Bethel from what appears to have been a heart attack. He was 55 years old. Hamilton traveled the world before presiding over one of the busiest criminal courts in the state, but he'll be remembered for more than just his time on the bench. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson reports.
For the last 4 years, Hamilton served as a Bethel judge for the 4th Judicial District of Alaska.
I think you can tell by the grief and the sadness and the shock here at the court.
Judge Leonard Devaney.
Marvin was just a wonderful person. He was an excellent and supportive co-worker, though he was well on his way to becoming a wonderful, wonderful judge. He treated people with respect and dignity and was perceived to be fair by all involved.
Devaney first knew of Hamilton as a public defender. Hamilton represented the accused, not only in Bethel, but in several corners of the state like Ketchikan and Barrow.
He has friends everywhere.
And that's not just limited to the state of Alaska, where Hamilton moved in the 1990s. He grew up in California and Arkansas, but he traveled the world as an attorney, serving in Micronesia and Africa. Devaney says that experience shaped his beliefs in the criminal justice system.
He knew the value of a jury trial. He had appeared in many countries, as I said, as a lawyer, and for where trials were only in front of judges. And he understood what a precious right it is for a defendant to have a jury decide their fate versus a bureaucrat or a judge who's been on the bench for a while, who maybe not represent the community that the crime occurred in.
When Hamilton wasn't presiding in front of a jury, he could be found performing in front of an audience.
Marv was one of these fellows who had a presence about him.
Mike Bricker with the Bethel Actors Guild.
He was able to connect with people in a way that was very meaningful. And that certainly carried across on the stage. He was able to connect with many, many, many people at once.
His first role was as the wizard in The Wizard of Oz. Bricker said that finding an audience's funny bone came easy for Hamilton.
He had an amazing ability to ad lib. And I directed him in several productions, and we never really knew what exactly was going to come out of him, but it was always right on the money and always very, very funny.
Bricker says Hamilton would regularly involve his children at play rehearsal. He's survived by his wife, Millie, and his 13-year-old daughter, Whitney, as well as his 5-year-old son, McKinley. The courthouse in Bethel will be closed Friday so that friends and staff there can attend Hamilton's memorial. Devaney says his presence there will be missed.
He just had an energy about him that if you were around him, he made you feel good too.
Marvin Hamilton III's memorial service is scheduled for Friday at 2 p.m. at the Cultural Center in Bethel. I'm Shane Iverson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton in Dillingham, Tim Ellis in Delta, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, and Shane Iverson in Bethel. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Andy Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. No other port in Alaska is building a 100-rail-car loop like the one going in at Port McKenzie. Exporting natural resources from rail to ship will be more efficient than ever. A single limestone deposit in the interior could mean a cement industry in Alaska. Port McKenzie Rail, hundreds of millions in state revenues, thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.